you synchronise all the clocks, Bob, they're all saying something different.
No, they're all over the place. I haven't touched them for a while.
25
to 8, 7. One of them, I've got to put a battery in one of them instead of not going at all. We all know each other?
Mick, Bill,
Jim,
Mo,
Mark.
You do now. Nice group. You get into the nitty gritties of bringing it on.
Oh no, not the nitty gritty again.
This is the gritty part. We'll leave the nitty behind. Who wants to kick at him?
Yeah, I guess today I had a more of a clear seeing of like a lessening of the search. Again, it was kind of seeing more clearly that the search, all of it happens in thought, all of it happens in, and then the person who's searching also happens in thought. So that thing that you say, that you got to start from the place of realizing that you are already that, I could see that clearly today, because it was almost like the idea of awareness or consciousness is the same for every person. Like, it's exactly the same. The only thing that changes for people is content of, like, their particular perspective, and all of that's only ever contained in thought.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess it's really hard to describe, like a moment of apparently learning something, but even then, it was kind of seen that even that is not it, because there wasn't any. Because that was something that changed. So, yeah, I don't know if that makes any sense.
And what are you?
Huh?
What are you and all that?
Just the thing that doesn't change.
Yeah, the change one.
Yeah.
And you can't describe it, can't give it any beginning on it or an end, say anything at all about it. But you can't negate it.
No. So all those little moments that I have when I'm writing, where I'm like, ooh, I'm getting somewhere, or I'm finding something, or discovering something, it's all horseshit. Yeah.
But that's it too. That's it too.
Yeah, yeah, at the same time.
The little moments?
Yeah.
And the horseshit?
Yeah.
It's very hard, when you were just speaking, it's very hard not to see that a thought or a statement or an idea or an emotion does not appear on that liveliness, you know, on that awakefulness. It's very hard to see that. That is not the case, you know. Because
say that again. I think
very, very hard to see. It's very difficult to see. While you were talking, anyway, this is what I thought. While you were talking, it was very hard for me to see that any thought that I might have was not appearing on that liveliness or life or whatever you want to call it, you know, or that awakefulness. It's very hard to see that a thought or a statement does not appear on that awakefulness, you know. It's very hard to see that. Once you've seen it, and then you've obviously had a good moment yesterday, it's very hard that whatever happens or whatever appears does not appear on that awakefulness. It's very hard not to see that. It's almost impossible. Once you see it clearly once, how could you think differently?
What do you mean doesn't appear on the...
Yeah, I guess I'm a bit confused.
No, I follow. I think you're just using negatives.
Yeah, I'm using negatives.
He's saying that once you've seen that thoughts appear in the space and you're the space, it's really, really tricky to fall for it for very long.
Yeah. Once you've seen it, like you often say, once you've seen it, you know, the belief disappears, it disintegrates.
Yeah. Even though it seems to be something appearing on something, it's not, it's still the one,
isn't it? Yeah, it's still the one essence, yeah.
Move up, Bill. Dear. Not going to be
come
crap.
A little bit closer.
Yeah, it was kind of, I guess I had another, the whole story, oh, I don't know, there was something else that clicked. I don't even know if I can put it into words. I don't think it was something to do with the story of me. It was something around that, you know, coming from the place of realizing that you have always been that. It was something really abstract that dropped, I don't even know how to say it.
You don't have to put it into words because you've got the concept of it.
Yeah.
But something was recognized there or resonated with it.
Mm.
So it's there.
Mm.
Now.
And it's always been the case, and always will be the case.
Yeah.
And even if you see it on your last breath before you die.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah. It was kind of seen that clearly, that even the whole bullshit that I think I'm trying to escape, the story, all that sort of stuff, is all that, is everything. It's always been. It's always been that.
So once you see it, it doesn't matter what you've done in the past or anything that's happened.
Yeah.
It just all falls away and it's just...
Yeah, yeah.
But intelligence will tell you not to bother carrying on the story. It's just a waste of time.
Yeah.
And you've had some good stories.
Yeah. That's some crackers.
So Bob, I've been concerned that I'm only here for a few days and I've been reading for years and looking apparently for years and years, and then when I've sat with you and had conversations with you, that there's been these just massive moments, you know, big physical feelings and just wow, get it moments, and I think, well, I leave on Friday, and the concern is that I'm going to go back to books and podcasts and videos and YouTube and whatnot. And it makes me think, well, what if, you know, all this time and then just moments with you and so much apparent progress, so much seeing through of so much of the stuff. It makes me think, well, what have I got to do? Come and move to Melbourne? Have I got, you know.
But what are you doing? What are you doing?
Well, it's as if I'm focusing the attention back on what it is that I am. When I'm with you.
Yeah, but what are you doing when you're just telling me all that?
Well, I'm making a story about the future.
About the future.
Which is happening now.
Yes.
So that's recognised. Mm. But statistically, right, if you look at the... If you did a time motion study, right, on my life so far in the last 3 days, there's been a whole barren period of 25 years, and then 2 or 3 days of kaboom. It's hard not to make that.
So you're going back into the 25 years and full stop. See what unfolds of itself.
But through the years I've met people who have said, oh yeah, you have to sit at the feet of the guru, blah blah blah. And you know, and I've always thought, no, that's bullshit. You either see it or you don't see it. You look or you don't look. You know, it's not up to you anyway. And then I come here, you know, and whilst this isn't wrapped up in gurudom, the fact of the matter is I have come halfway around the world to see you. And I see all these things from doing this. So maybe there's some validity in that, the whole idea of resonance and whatnot.
Where did it all take place?
Well, it all takes place in no thing, which has no position.
Yeah.
So it's as here as it is there.
No time, no space.
Yeah.
But you're conceptualising the story of place. need what I did.
But you provoke me in the conversations in a way that I don't know anyone else that can do that. So I'm investigating, but when I'm investigating with you provoking me and quite very skillfully seeing my mistakes and hammering into that, and then in that seems to be like a pause, a stop.
Yeah.
It's poof, and it's that. Whereas when the investigation seems to be happening here, even though it seems quite clear that that I'm not doing it, but it's happening here, it's just very on a level. You're trying to look at it with the mind. Nothing happens. It's not the right tool. So my only hope is that all I can do is to have staying with the no thing as being the forefront, everything being about staying there, and trying to see it in that.
Just saying that, like I say, you'll soon recognise where it is. You start getting into the stories, you know, saying, hang on a minute, full stop.
But is there no more to it? Is what I've seen it? Is that it? I mean, what I mean is...
Yeah, come tomorrow night.
I know.
That's right.
But it seems so simple.
You're only a devil one.
No, but do you know what I mean? I've pointed back. I've seen that there's a space. That's it. That's it. That's the space. That's the space like awareness.
Well, what do you want?
Well, fireworks, frankly. Angels, hearts.
It's very important. I mean, the experience. Like when you listen to this, when he goes through the spiel for the very first time, you're paying rapt attention. You're actually in your own mind. You're actually following along, and it's just so bleeding obvious. And I had a lot of fear come up because I was doing it. And I knew he was right. And I was trying to. My mind was trying to figure a way out. So I had a lot of fear, but like I saw it. Like it really, and literally, it was the first time I ever came here. I saw, and I keep coming back, and I often, you know, and then, like I remember early days, I'd come in and sort of, and then I'd find myself getting frustrated because seemingly I forgot it. I had it, and then I forgot it.
It all
but it's just like, you know, it's just the story, and then it just seems to fall away a little bit.
Right.
Not a lot. It falls away over time, seemingly. Right. But that's just a story. But I had that. I had exactly like that. I've been to, you know, gurus and everything, but, you know, literally just sitting here in a meeting, just there going, it can't, you know, like I was just trying to work it out. It couldn't be that simple. And what it was saying was terribly profound. It was like, so the very idea that, so who I thought I was, never was, isn't, and never was.
Couldn't have been.
And couldn't have been, yeah. I mean, given that you sort of, I've lived sort of 40 something years of my life with that belief.
Yeah.
And then when you hear it, it really is.
Well, me too.
Abrupt.
And I think one of the things that stirred it up today is that you think about going home and people asking you, well, you went all the way to Australia to meet this guy and what, join a cult or whatever it is that you're doing. My mum and dad, like, what are you doing? You know, like, well, you look up, say the bottom, and think, well, maybe you should, I don't know, I'm going on holiday.
But it can't be a cult if you're only paying 20 bucks at the door. Cults cost a lot more. But I had 30 years of expectations about lights and kundalini and all blah, blah, blah. And then, but like Bob says, you see through it once and you'll never be the same again. You can't go back, you know?
There is a sort of weight. You seemingly go back. You might lose your temper or whatever your little thing used to be. There's just this weight of habit. Almost... your body does it, it really does fall away.
Right.
There's no you doing it. It gets slightly frustrating, actually, that.
That's what I felt today.
It's a bit boring.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, this is boring, yeah. Seeing pretty.
So it's never boring.
Thanks for boring our pants all, Bob.
Well. Boring is interesting because I still reckon there are stages with this.
Yeah.
You know, you hear, so there's some sort of resonance on the first what time you hear Bob, and then it just sort of grows. There's nothing more that you need to know, but you're like, you're cleaning the mirror more and more. You know?
Yeah. Well, the thing and is boring.
And I've read, that. It looks a bit boring when it's still a bit misty and a bit dirty, but you keep cleaning it and it shines through, you know? It's just, the more you...
That's right, I'm just behind you in the development.
Yeah, that's right.
One day
you came a week after me, that's right. That's like a week earlier, yeah.
What I find boring is having seen it so clearly and it being so wow, and then just the whole thought patterns, I've seen a pretty girl, I'm going to get her.
It doesn't matter.
All that, and that's what I find boring.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, the other side is...
Pretty girl, nothing's really going to change.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to change.
I'm still
except the truth will set you free. The truth has set you free now. Mm-hmm. You've seen it.
I mean, there's
nothing will change. You'll still chase the Sheilas. You'll still get mad. Yeah. You'll still be happy. You'll still be joyous. You'll have all the full range of experience, of emotions and blah, blah, blah. You might be a bit more equanimous or steadfast or whatever, but, you know, it's just ordinary awareness.
Yeah.
Ordinary awareness.
Yeah, because it sort of flips out. Your brain starts saying, well, you know, well, then there's nobody to do anything.
Yeah.
Then I'm not going to do anything. And then what's going to happen? You're going to fall apart.
Because I've been looking for so long. Yeah. I've been through all the mind trips. I don't feel like I have any problems with any of the concepts whatsoever. But it's suddenly having an actual, oh, wow. Because the thing up until yesterday was I just thought being was limited to here. So I got being, got the pointing and all the rest of it. But Bob pointed out that the being doesn't start and stop here. There's no barriers to it. There's no limit to it. So your being, my being, there's no anyone's being. It's just all being.
There's no inside and outside.
Yeah. No. That's like a big whoa. So there's that. The thoughts constantly are trying to just make it into you're here, and that's really boring, I think. But you're saying that over time or at time that idea just wanes.
Well, just
has that been your experience?
There'll be experience when you just. You know, you just function. I mean, I don't know. You think it, and then you sort of. It's only I don't notice, and so I do my thing. And I'm thinking about this. I'm doing this. I'm doing it. But then, if I'm out of kilter at some point in time, you know, it just suddenly I see it.
Mm.
So, you know what I mean? I don't know. And you still want to do things, and you can still sort of try and discipline your mind and. You know, or whatever, you know what I mean? It's like nothing, it's like the chop wood, carry water, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
You still got to do what you got to do, and you function, but you're sort of free in a way, because there's no this sort of weight, there's a me against the world, and I've got to, you know, sort of, it's never quite the same, it's just not the same.
Right.
So the, you know, and I still think, fearful of being, you know, I'm normally worried about this situation, whatever, what would that be, or something, you know, but
if you just keep coming back to, like, Bob points out awareness very simply and clearly, if you just keep coming back to that, awareness is like this, and it is ever fresh.
Mm.
You know, awareness is, boredom arises and awareness comes, and boredom comes and goes, but awareness itself is, it's ever fresh, ever new.
Mm.
Doesn't get boring.
No.
And it's self-aware, and that means it's, you don't have to do anything to be aware.
No.
It's stopping doing things. It's just stopping doing things. And awareness, you realise that awareness is just, it's like the sun, it just shines. The awareness is aware. It's just seeing just happen. You don't have to do anything to see.
So it's normal then for having, and I come from like a Krishnamurti background and all that, which is all very mental, it's all pointing at enlightenment, this big moment and everything. So there's this like a shadow cast forward of waiting for this thing to come, whereas intellectually now I think, well, that's a ridiculous concept, because there's no one
for it to happen. And if you're saying, I want to get enlightened, then you've created time.
And a person for it to happen to.
So if there's no person... now, or before, or if it could be, who's going to get enlightened?
Quite. And having seen being everywhere, and you know, having no start and no finish, that is so obviously clear, and yet there's like this shadow of the idea, but I guess that's just like an echo from having thought about it for so long, maybe. I mean, I feel like I'm trying to do something about this thought that comes up, to explaining to it, or, you know, trying to create a framework where it's so obvious that it's false, so that it stops happening.
That's all just thinking and considering, and that's happening in awareness or in faith.
Yeah. Doesn't have to be a problem that that's happening.
No, thinking's not a problem. Thoughts can be free to just crack along, and doesn't matter.
Mm. Some people sometimes raise the question about instinct, which is a very refined aspect, and this shadow you have is probably a very refined aspect of some sort, but nevertheless it's still an appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, appearing on, you know, what you are. There's only knowing, there's only seeing. That's all there can be. And you, like me, may be championing to be able to develop something really beautiful when you go back to the UK, so that you can tell people back there what this is all about. But you have to really go back to your 25 years and you'll develop the best pointer or the best rave about this, mm. and you'll scratch your head and say, why the fuck don't they understand this?
Mm.
You know, it's so clear now. But most people just don't see it.
Most people don't get it.
No.
Talk to people about it.
Oh no, believe me, I don't want to go back and start an ashram. I don't want to go back and no one even ask me about it. I don't want to have to explain. I don't want to even talk about it, really. I just want to carry on like life, just being normal.
Well, what are you going to say about Bob? You went to Australia to say, Bob, what are you going to say? Oh, it was all right.
Good guy.
Good guy. It was all right.
It was all right.
Pizza and a beer.
Yeah.
Ask Bob what the best pointer is. You know, the one that you can go to someone,
yeah.
just lay it on them, and they say, got it. And there's not a best pointer, of course, because everyone,
different from
100 pointers will suit 100 different people.
Yes, you don't know what you're going to say to anyone.
No.
What comes out of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel reluctant to talk to anyone about it. I don't want to set them off on any sort of path that I've been down, you know. I don't want to be responsible for that.
Well, haven't you got the shortcut now? You don't have to worry about the path you've been down.
Yeah,
the direct.
Straight through the gate.
Who was it that said they didn't want the set up? Was it John Wheeler or someone like that said he didn't want miserable seekers cluttering up his front room? He didn't want to talk to anyone about it so they don't knock on his door on a Sunday morning.
You never know what way it might express you.
No.
Mm-hmm. And I came back, I had to talk about it.
Yeah.
People say, did the guru teacher tell you to talk? I said, no, I wouldn't give the stuff if he told me not to.
No.
He couldn't have stopped it.
No.
Mm.
You just felt very strongly. Mm. Yeah.
I bet they see some sort of clarity or something in you. You don't say anything. You know, you'll have a happy little whatever or whatever.
Yeah.
And I say, what's
going on there?
What's going on there? Yeah. That's what I read.
Because when you actually say it, I saw that there was no me and it was great. And it's like, anyone can read that in the book.
It sounds
like you're just spouting crap.
Yeah.
Like, that,
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
You read a book and you have these liners and.
Often when people talk about stuff like that, often it's just to attract attention to themselves. In my experience, I speak to people like that, they come along offering advice and all this, and it turns out they haven't seen the thing, and
they read the books and
they've got
the intellectual understanding.
Regurgitated,
And mind you, Bob's got this beautiful analogy about going down to the sea to see if it's blue. You've heard it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really... But it's a beauty. It's a beauty. You go and see if it's blue and it's not. You look for an eye and you don't find one.
Mm-hmm.
but you know, sure as eggs.
Mildly disappointed the sea doesn't appear clear.
Yeah, that's right. Well, if it did, that'd back everything up.
But I know it's not blue. Why is it clear?
Yeah, I guess it was just old patterns wanting to try and protect my imaginary me from situations that you don't know how to respond to. You know, how do I explain to my mum and my dad, who have no knowledge about what I've been reading about for 20 years, what this is about? They're going to say something like, was it what you wanted? You know, did you get what you wanted? You know, and what do you say to that? You know, without going five sides of A4, you can't try and make it clear. Yeah, exactly. That was great. I'm glad I went. You know, that's all I can really say, I suppose. But that, you're trying to predict.
Well, your mum and dad love you. All they want to do is see that you're happy.
Yeah.
Good. I feel really relaxed now. Yeah. I'm feeling good about myself.
Yeah. No more than that.
They don't want to know anymore. Mm. You've made them happy.
But I remember listening to you on one of the podcasts saying that when you came back, there were a lot of people who, your circle of friends or associates at the time, a lot of the people who you knew beforehand didn't want anything to do with you after then, but there was a whole other set of people who were attracted to what you had to say. So you're sort of aware of the fact that people have some idea about what it is I'm into and things I might have said over time. And then if you have a change in your behaviour, then you can just imagine what they're going to say, or you can imagine what blah, 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 he's this, that and the other now, or he's been off to see Bob and all that. So I'm sort of prepared for the fact that there's a potential of some churn, you know.
Well, you're bound to change.
Mm.
I mean, I don't think anybody knows anything. I mean, the big difference with me is that I didn't go off once in a while. Every once in a while, I used to go off, lose my temper. Mm. Just doesn't happen.
There's not anymore.
Mm. I mean, no one's going to notice. I mean, Bob, maybe because he felt moved to talk about it. I haven't to. I mean, I've tried. I think I sort of talked one or two or three people into coming and having a look.
Right.
And that's about the extent. I'd just say, well, you know, maybe we'll have a look, but they all just came once.
Right. Yeah. But people like at your work or anything like that, you wouldn't know that you'd ever be interested in anything.
No, and I wouldn't tell them.
No.
Have you tried?
I've tried with various people. You just move to, you know when the situation's right, you just think of it. I think it's just like I often say, there's a lot of people, I don't think this is an absolute truth. I just think it's pointing to the truth. And you either see it or you don't. And a lot of people just, what's the purpose of Bob? Or, you know, is it, you know, what he says? You know, in and of itself, like, it's not an abstraction, it's to get you to see for yourself, and but do I think that everybody's got to see what I, you know, what he's pointing at? No, I don't, because a lot of people just get perfectly happy, you know. It's just, it's tortured twits like me that need that sort of thing.
Yeah, it always amazes me when I see people who are just blissfully happy.
Well, they seem,
you know, with their couples and their relationship and everything's just going well, and you think, maybe you haven't studied philosophy for years. How are you just?
And he's good looking. And he's wealthy.
Yeah,
and he's got the best
money.
Car, he's happy.
Got his car.
And he's a really nice guy.
Well, I bet you if you went up to any of those guys, any of them, more women, and said, "Have you found what you're looking for?"
Yeah,
I bet they'd say no.
I reckon they'd say yes.
Mate, Lamborghini, big busty wife, good job. I mean, who?
I reckon some of them are bloody happy.
Do you reckon? Well, if you really ask them, just eyeball them and say, "Have you found what you're looking
for?" Look, I know you're a miserable bastard. Just tell them.
Just tell me.
You're a miserable bastard.
And then get them to define it. And what would it be, you know, apart from their riches and their fast car and their pub on the corner or whatever?
But that's just their deal, though, isn't it?
That's their deal, but, you know, I mean, look, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter.
Because some people won't ever look at this or ever have
the inclination
to do it or won't do it. And if it doesn't come up for them, then that's...
They may just not be exposed to it.
Yeah,
they might even have a chance to ask the question, "Who am I?"
Yeah.
You know, they might just, it might cross their path.
That's the problem of the ego. That's the only problem. And some egos are not too pronounced, you know. They can get along quite well in the world, you know, without being into the extremes.
Yeah.
You don't need to look it up, you know. Mm.
The bigger the ego is inclined to look, you think, or not really?
Well, I don't know whether it makes them inclined to look. To a certain stage, it might have did here, you know, and I didn't know anything about it, but the looking was going to happen, or the turnaround. You know.
Like for me, it was like, not, I don't even want to say like get so dramatic to say a matter of life and death, but it was the only direction that I could go because. You know, the pendulum swings were getting so. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was a. And it doesn't make sense to say that either, because it's the only way that it did go, because it's the only way that it went.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there was that.
Well, if you go the other way, if you go the other way.
That scent was there, you know?
You end up suicide.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Because, you know, it's a strong ego is just so much suffering and it's so awful that you want to kill yourself.
I mean, I always remember hunting this down with great gusto, but not really knowing what the hell I was looking for. Because I started with, you know, meditation techniques and 30 years, and then one day I thought, what the hell is going on? Where is my enlightenment for all the time that I've spent meditating, all the dough that I've spent, all the books that I've read, you know, where's my... fucking enlightenment.
Yeah. We should have come along earlier, Bill.
Well, and then, Bob, I googled, I think for the last time, enlightenment or something, and then you sprung up. I thought, I'll go around and tell this bloke a couple of things. I've got bloody 40 years worth. As soon as I walked in, I think half an hour later, I said, it's all here. I don't need to go anywhere else. Honestly, I haven't read a book since, except some of yours, and you know, otherwise always in libraries. Looking for books, looking for answers, doing the program, trying to be vegetarian, which I hated. Don't have any meals. I can have chamomile tea.
Don't eat all those things,
until it's come out of your ears. Yeah. And the funny thing is, when you see it, then that was always like that. That's the biggest laugh in the world.
There's nothing like a slice of dead cow.
Dead cow?
A slice of dead cow. Okay. Yeah.
Yum yum.
Just have an image then of like a cow like sideways, but the bandsaw that's just run across it at an inch thick, and then that slab just falling onto a barbecue. That'd be awesome.
So with you, what have you been looking at for 21 years?
I did Well, everything kicked off when I was about 12 or 13 and my cousin died, and it was like it had a real big effect on me. Seeking started at that point.
Yeah.
So like I'm 43 now, so every between then and now I've been reading philosophy, 10 years with Krishnamurti, and that's a head fuck. And you can bang your head against the wall with Krishnamurti, being style every day.
If you listen to him now, hear as a bell.
In fact, one of the podcasts that Gilbert did, there was a Krishnamurti thing in it. And interestingly, listening to it, I got the same feeling of frustration that I used to get all that time, but day in, day out. For Krishnamurti is like, there's this thing, you can't have it, I've got it. Go into your mind and try and find it. Your mind won't help you. Go.
Yeah.
It's horrific.
Listen now, I bet you hear it differently.
Oh, totally. I just walk away. It's not for me.
Even listen to it, because he says very Advaita-ish things.
It's very much so, But there's a certain flavour with that thing that I've never met anyone that has found any sort of peace or seen anything through it. Yeah, lots of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, 10 years of that, 10 years of Ramesh, and then find Bob, and then boom.
You're going to write a testimonial for your next 20 years of this, 20 years of that, Bob for 2 days, boom! The million seller.
The crowd will come.
Finally, Bob, you have arrived!
You have arrived!
It's just hilarious that
it's the awareness that's been there the whole time, for the whole thing, watching this whole thing.
Tossing their nose in the face.
Yeah.
We never ignore it.
Yeah.
What do you say about ignore, Bob? Ignore, we ignore. What do we ignore?
We ignore our true nature.
Our true nature, yeah.
Focus on the appearance and believe the appearance.
So behaviour's got nothing to do with this. Your behaviour, the way you behave in the world, it's got nothing to do with this whatsoever. How you are, your character, it's irrelevant, isn't it?
Behaviour is just the same as the rest of the function. It's coming with that intelligence energy.
Yeah. I mean, I look back in instances that have come about in my life, this life, where I've been incredibly kind and also incredibly cruel at times, which, you know, I've come with all the guilt and the shame and all the rest of it. But couldn't have been any different. You know, it was so clear that it couldn't have been any different. Things that happened in a turn that was so quick, I look back and think, why? Why did I do that? And yet, if you're just a tool in being used, then I guess that's the way it had to be.
Mm.
It's the only way of resolving it. I look back now with this new perception and I look back and think, I don't feel guilty about these things anymore. I feel like that it's actually unrelated. You're not in control of any of it.
Yeah, but you don't keep doing it.
Yeah, but I haven't got any control about whether I do these things again or not.
You don't. Yes, you haven't got any control, but you won't. What's the necessity of it? What are you going to get? How's it going to feed the knee or fix the knee? What are you relating it to?
So because the self-centre isn't the focus of attention anymore, then you think actions change because of that?
Yeah, well, of course. A fixed reference point you're relating to constantly. You're not relating to it, we'll just go, you are the flow. Go with the flow, it's the way it flows. As you say, you don't know which way it's going to flow.
Truth, there's no real you to, you know, that control it anyway.
No.
So, but you can still, like, I mean, you still function, you still think how to work it. I mean, that's, you know, this is the form you take, this is the appearance, you're in the appearance seemingly, and you know, the body mind functions in the appearance.
And as Bob pointed out yesterday, it's totally unique.
You're sort of and I keep being mildly disappointed that this is still the way. But you know, I know.
We've all got a certain nature or a certain bent.
Yeah.
And that's just how this operates. Yeah, and that operates.
And this is what I felt recently over the last few months before coming here. I just felt more like I'm a piano player, and all it's done, all it's been is pain through my whole life. I went to music college, and the whole thing has just been pain, you know. Wanting to be better, being around people that it's all more, better, better, not good enough, all of that. It's just been a perfect, music has just been an absolute perfect avenue for pain. You know, everything you need about not feeling good enough or is perfect for music or art or any of those sort of things. Probably science as well, for people that are in that sort of world. But for me, it's been absolute perfect backdrop for not being good enough, for not getting where you want to go, not being right. You know, and then recently, all that's sort of fallen away to like, well, this is how I am, this is how it is. You know, this is when I play the piano, this is how it comes out. It's only like this when I do it. Take it or leave it, I'm going monkeys before you think about it anymore. And that has been a real big relief. And that's purely down to looking at this. Because who cares? I mean, who cares? You know, like Bob said yesterday, there's 10 people in the room, there's 10 different opinions. And if there's 100 people in the room when you're playing the piano, then there'll be 100 opinions. And you can't make them like you. So,
which one's right?
And exactly, which one's right? They don't know where you've come from. They don't know, you mean, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, for some individuals, not most probably isn't super strong, but certain people, and I suppose it'd be a bit more obvious exactly what you're talking about that when you're talking about a piano player, but there's this drive for excellence. You know, so, you know, it's not just a matter of learning the skill, it's a matter of perfecting it. You know.
But if you watch Young Musician of the Year, I don't know if you have that here, but I mean, there's kids, they're like 14, and they're playing Rachmaninoff. Note perfect with bravado and beauty and emotion, and you're watching them and I can't do that, I'll never be able to do that, I don't even want to do that, you know. So if it is a scale of judgment and you're only as good if you're the best or whatever, it just doesn't work in music.
Yeah, but see, that's the flip. It's like, so for the certain, particularly when you do what you love, it's not. But it's not a matter of judgment. It's not a matter of, oh, I've got to be better. It's just there's a natural drive for excellence.
Yeah, certainly within
versus,
yourself.
Versus, oh, I have
yourself.
To do this because I'm in competition and I can't bear being seen less than or whatever. No, then you're into it.
That's the world that they give you when you go to college.
Yeah,
that's what they give
you.
Yeah, and everything is there to support that. All the people around you, all supports that view. Not the view that you, if there's anything to compete against, it's yourself and to become better and all that.
I mean, you see, the supremes in any sort of, you know, whether it's the Olympics or whatever, I mean, really in the end, they sort of competing, they all say this, they're competing against themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get to, do you know what I mean? It's sort of, so they're striving within themselves. So it wasn't like, you know, the Tiger Woods or something like that.
Mm.
He's already beaten the best. And you know, but he's still, they're sort of, which is nice, I mean, I think.
But they're freakishly good, you know, all those people, they're so freakishly good that the mere mortals, you know, have no, I just wish I'd been told at the beginning that just treat this as a hobby.
Mm.
If you treat it as a hobby, then there's no competition and no pressure, then you can just enjoy, I could have enjoyed it all the way. I've been playing since I was 4. I could have enjoyed playing the piano for 40 years, and I've enjoyed it for about 3 months.
And if you were been playing like Rachmaninoff with your eyes closed and standing, whatever, how good those kids are, you might have been playing in the London Palais, the Not Met Bob.
Absolutely.
All this sort of stuff is
absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Beautiful,
well,
really. It's all Godspeed.
Yeah.
You know? It's all Godspeed. It's all like...
But
spontaneous.
And
just happening.
All the piano players in the world, they all can't be the best.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you're so concerned because it's so public and so you set yourself up to be so vulnerable.
Yeah.
When you consider yourself to be the body, then you do this thing in front of other people and they're clearly judging you, they are, then you're subject to all of that and it affects what's happening, becomes a loop.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't consider yourself to be a person, then this is just happening. And
but don't
you
think?
You,
but don't
you
think there are piano? Let's just say because it's a piano player. Let's just say somebody playing a violin, for example. Don't you think there are people who are playing violin who are just like her, you know, solo, just you know, whatever they're called, supreme soloists or whatever they're called. You know, and there's other ones who are playing an orchestra, very very high, to a very very high standard. I mean. They all don't necessarily think the way you think about how they're trained through music. Do you know what I mean?
Do you mean what you think that they just don't?
No,
have
how
that?
you feel pressured. You know.
Oh no, because I'm just not suited for that.
They
world.
Were just exactly.
Yeah,
so
I mean, there are people that are suited
yeah.
to want to be the best and
but,
be.
But even they're really superb. Like there are people who are, let's say, you know, they're in their first whatever, the first row of the big orchestra, and they're playing viola or violin or something like that, and they're one of the top three in the orchestra, but they're not then the soloist comes out who's better than them or whatever, do you know what I mean? But like they're supremely happy just because.
Well, that could be true.
Well, it is.
Do you think
it is?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're not all, it's just, it's a particular, it's like Bob was talking about, it's a particular ego, it's an attachment.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a preconception about how things are supposed to be. So you can sort of say, well, it's all pressure external, but really there are people who wouldn't be as bothered by the external
pressure.
Oh,
that's certainly true. That's certainly true.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Bill's absolutely right. You know, all of these things have come about to if I was happy doing that, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be interested in non-duality or finding out what I am if I was just, you know, if I'd got all the girls that I wanted and done all the things, all the music I'd ever wanted, why would I be here? I'd just be happy. I'd be on my yacht.
And how are you feeling now?
Feeling pretty good about it.
The Buddha had all those things, didn't he? The Buddha had all those things and then he still knew that it wasn't right.
I don't know about that, mate, really.
Yeah, he was a prince. He was a royalty. He was royalty. Mm.
Was he the Buddha after the prince, wasn't he?
I can't remember the story, but he achieved Buddha under the Buddha tree, Bodhi tree or whatever. But that was a long time. But he became an ascetic long after he was, you know.
Yeah.
And that story is retold in Christianity lots of times. Lots of different great Christian saints who were, you know, seemingly had everything.
Yeah.
And then became ascetics.
Yeah.
And their bliss came in. You know, seemingly.
So back to the point that there's no relationship between how you are in your character as a person, and this, no relationship.
No.
It doesn't matter.
The big question is, we often prattle away wondering, I don't know, this is just prattling, okay, so, but whether people, just for love, so rather than being innocent like me, you know, ill at ease and discontent, there are people who love, who would seek because of love of the truth, or love of the divine, or whatever. Is that possible? And I thought it was. Everybody else said, no, you're wrong, you idiot, they're all discontent. Even the ones that seemingly, you know, even the ones that seemingly do it,
well,
for a positive...
Well, discontent still arises, you know. Yeah. For me, it appears. Well, it's there, you know, and if you...
So you still get, okay, you're discontent after you've achieved enlightenment, after you achieve enlightenment.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I do. What a bastard. But it all, you know, everything is just spontaneous, it just arises. And discontent or contentedness.
There's no, it's all one. And something wonderful to say disappeared.
That was enough, Bob. It's all one.
It's all one. Okay, let's go down to the pub.
Yeah, that's, well, that's good. It's all one, so it's all an equilibrium. So what could be better or worse?
Mm. You said from time to time, Bob, everything's valid in the appearance.
Yeah. Because it's only appearance, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
As anything. With any substance or any impact.
And just like everything's valid in a dream, everything's valid in this seeming appearance. Yeah.
So if something comes up that doesn't fit with the idea of enlightenment or clarity or something, then that isn't a sign that you haven't seen it, because anything can come up.
Why would you carry around an idea of enlightenment when you reckon there's no such fucking thing?
Well, I'm just trying to use words to describe the thing. I don't have the idea of enlightenment anymore.
Pardon?
But I don't have the idea of enlightenment anymore, because there's only being, I'm the being, there's only being. So I see that.
If confusion comes up.
Yeah.
So what recognises confusion?
Well, the being recognises confusion, but...
So if you can recognise confusion, then what recognises it is not confused.
Okay, so, but I suppose my point is...
So confusion can come up, can come and go.
But surely confusion comes up in relation to the hook.
What hook?
The hook of...
Where is this? Show me this hook.
But I would have thought, okay, so my projection is that having seen what I am, why would confusion ever come up? Because surely confusion would ever come up in light of the misunderstanding of what you are. Are you saying
who's
that
confused?
Anything
who's
could
confused?
Come up?
That presupposes that there's a you that's got it.
Well, this is it. So if there's no you, why would there ever be confusion?
Because all thoughts are spontaneous.
Well,
yeah.
So it doesn't matter what thoughts come up. It
so
becomes a distance that happens between... There's just like a letting go of the importance of thought.
Mm-hmm.
So thoughts can come up, and in that confusion can seemingly happen.
Mm-hmm.
Doubt can come up.
Yeah.
Doubt.
Yeah, doubt.
And doubt, what knows doubt? That doubt is like this? What can see doubt as an object? It can't be. It's an object in awareness.
So you don't give any validity to any of the things that come up. You treat them all the same. You just see them from awareness, and that's it.
Well, awareness, it's not that you're seeing things,
well,
because that's created a duality of me seeing something. It's just like, it's just spontaneous. It's just like what's it.
They're all two ends of the same stick, pairs of opposites. Doubt, confusion, doubt's just another thought. Happiness, unhappiness, all that. So, you know, the resistance, you recognise the resistance. And you realise that resistance is the problem. So you can't be non-resistant. All has to happen is to recognise your resistance. Where could it be recognised from?
Mm-hmm.
Non-resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Recognised from its opposite. Be attentive. You can't be, you know, attentive. All you can do is recognise your inattention, and that must be from the point of attention. But try to have some concept of what these things are and start from that. It's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because it vibrates in the pairs of opposites always, it's only from its opposite that you fall into the...
Yeah.
So if you get fixated, oh, they have to be clear, there has to be clarity all the time.
Yeah.
Then you're brought into it again.
And yeah.
If there's clarity, there has to be, you know, confusion. You know, they're opposites.
Okay. But because you're neither of them, it's not a problem.
Yeah. But when you just relax back and, you know, present and aware without doing anything,
mm-hmm.
there's a natural clarity that comes up.
But yeah.
Don't grab onto clarity
yeah.
and you've lost it.
Okay, I see that.
Look at that in the manifestation. A pile of water, you stir it, you know, it's got mud in, you're stirring and stirring and stirring, you know. Trying to get it clear, you'll never get it clear by stirring. What do? You let it become still.
Yeah.
It settles it itself.
Yeah. See, over the years, I have, once we spoke on the phone a few years ago, and I asked you about meditating, which I've never done really, messed around a few years ago, and I said, well, I've been doing this thing where I just sit quietly and do nothing, don't focus on anything, but just don't do anything for a while. And then I noticed that some really incredibly calm, wonderful, beautiful love, feelings of love would just come up, like waves of just joyous feelings, really. Yeah. I don't know why I didn't do it every day, but anyway, well, there you go. Probably just, I don't know, a few times this would happen. And yet I feel the urge to do that again now, not to get anywhere, but just to bathe in it, in a way. Is that... do you recognise that?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I'm a member of AA, and I go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and
mm-hmm.
Just the last 3 weeks, Bob, I've been going to a meeting once a week, a meditation meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I've never gone to a meditation meeting before, but anyway. It's a meditation meeting. I go to a meditation meeting once a week, which I only started doing 3 weeks ago. And I used to meditate long before I came to Bob.
Mm-hmm.
He used to do a lot of meditation. I went to gurus and taught meditation and everything. And I just haven't done it. But anyway, I went and did... it's ridiculous. It's a lead meditation, with a CD player and
mm-hmm.
a tower of brack or something. Some Buddhist type thing, and three different methods. So each week it's different type of meditation. So, but it's basically just you follow, and then there's pieces to it. So whatever. And it's really, I just familiar with the stillness.
Mm.
Like you sort of say, I'm just thinking, well. Why haven't we been doing this?
Yeah,
quite nice.
Yeah, it's actually. I always remember that when I do that. I remember thinking, God, this is actually the best thing I do in my life. This feeling is better than sex. It's better than drugs. It's better than music. It's no, because it's just so pure and beautiful and deep and like, wow, this is God. This is amazing. And then you don't do it for a year.
Well, in the same way that you do that, you might go and have a sauna or a massage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Again, they're just spontaneous arisings.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. They're not necessarily going to lead to anything in particular.
I think that's the difference.
Or you'll eat the best palmy, or you'll have...
I think in the past, I was thinking about doing that to try and get enlightenment. Whereas if I was to do that now, it's not that. It's just a thing that you might do. It's not because of a reason. Mm.
For Thai meditation, you've got to be a meditator. Mm. You can't meditate. It's what they call undistracted non-meditation. We are not trying to meditate, trying to get somewhere.
Mm.
And that undistracted meditation, you're not doing anything, but you're never away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that I was thinking about today, that somebody said it before, there's the outside-inside thing.
Mm-hmm.
That came up for me today, that there's no barrier. I guess the idea that I had was that this body or the person that I believe myself to be is the perceived barrier between inside and outside,
yeah.
And that kind of dissolved today, that idea. And then there was also the idea that my thought or who I am is separate from reality. And then again, it was actually, it's not. It's the thinking, the thinking that happens is actually part of, it's part of everything that happens. Yeah. So it's all, it's not separate. It's not like I've got to change my thinking because my thinking is bad or whatever. It was just, again, just, it was the same. The thinking happens with the same spontaneity as a car going past or a sound appearing or...
Well, we tell you that, we ask when we ask you what's the next thought going to be. What do you say? You don't know.
Mm.
So, you don't think any thoughts. All thoughts are unthought.
Yeah.
No thinker of them. They come up, spontaneously.
Yeah. And that thought that comes up spontaneously contains the person that you believe yourself to be. Mm. Or the figment that you believe yourself to be. Conceptual. So the thoughts are spontaneous, your actions are spontaneous, and the environment's clearly spontaneous.
And the image you form from those thoughts that
is
you think you are.
Spontaneous.
That's spontaneous.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty crazy.
I mean, there's certainly sort of a fulcrum, isn't there? This is the the original the I am, and then there's this sort of fulcrum of recurrent thoughts and ideas that swing around, and when it's sort of seeing that. That's just, an aid to social, an aid to the functioning. It's no more than that.
Yeah.
But certainly, Elvis' nature will tend to change, I think.
But to me, it's quite miraculous. You all you have to do is think, like, I am Mark. And then, spontaneously, suddenly, all the thoughts and the things that happen, they all just pop up already, and then my whole history is there.
Yeah.
And this is me, and it's one thought, and look into it, and the whole the rest of it just is there.
Incredible. Like
world.
It's
like magic.
It's like looking into an atom that contains the universe.
That's right. when you think of it, like this body now is connected to the body from yesterday, from right back to a baby, and so this body is like connected. It's like Indra's net. It's like what this is now is a reflection of everything that's gone before, gone in the past, and will influence everything about this body in the future until it dies.
Yeah.
And it's like you buy into one, and the whole from a baby to death, it's all there, and it doesn't matter what point you look at the body, it's all connected. Mm. It's all just one.
Mm-hmm.
This is quite incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Nisargadatta says you can only ever be the seeing or the knowing. You never anything that you can conceive or perceive. You are always that pure subjectivity. Always sounds like there's this pure subjectivity and something else. However, that paradox is also contained in what you are. I think I often set out to try and define awareness, because in a sense it's quite sort of palpable. It's sort of like, it's obvious. I know you can't measure it or weigh it or...
You can't find it, and you can't negate it.
That's right. So in that sense it's palpable, but even that palpability, when I have just said what I've said, that appears in, even something, I'm not going to say beyond that awareness, but there's just nothing there, There's just absolutely, it's just emptiness.
The awareness occurs in awareness.
The awareness occurs in awareness.
Can I ask a question? You mentioned something before about strong egos, and I guess I think I have a fairly strong ego, a fairly strong mind. Because my weekly experiences go from, complete, almost insanity, suicidal thoughts, just crazy thinking, like it's really vivid and really full on. But there's always, in that, there's always, I don't ever get lost in it. It's just like I kind of sit and I go, you know, and sometimes it gets quite overwhelming, but there's always a center to it. So
recognition.
Yeah. I can buy into it, but then it will fall away and it gets, you know, normally you'll get followed by just clear seeing. And it seems to, like, I guess for the last...
So you've already got a perspective on it.
Yeah, but it's...
I mean, it's a big, huge difference between being completely, I am the thinker thinking these thoughts.
Yeah.
You don't think that, but there's the knowing that this is me thinking these thoughts versus suddenly becoming aware of your thinking.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You can't decide.
Yeah,
you can decide as much as you want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
10 minutes later, you're going to be seemingly lost in it.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
And I used to, I guess, like for a lot of my life, like I get lost in it, and it was quite, you know, it's horrendously traumatic, and I wouldn't even know to look back. I'd look back and go, "Oh my god, what the hell?" Like there'd be a chunk of my life, and I'm like, "What the hell happened there?" Like, you know, and just not. I kind of look at it as that swinging pendulum as a benefit, because it clearly points to that which doesn't change. Do you know what I mean? Like the extremes are so violent.
Why not?
I kind of look at it and say,
instead of having it as a swinging pendulum,
yeah,
why don't you have it straight? Then see, it's all on one stick.
Mm.
The subject and the object is one and the same thing. But while they're swinging, you've got the concept of a subject and an object, the opposite.
Yeah,
of that.
Yeah.
It really, there's no one end of the stick. Each stick's got two ends to it.
Because we talked about that last week. Do you get that?
The one,
the stick. Stick has two ends.
Yeah.
So, you know, when Bob talks about hearing, you know, it's hearing, and there's the conceptually, it's a natural thing to a sense of something, an object heard, and a sense of me hearing it.
Yeah.
That's the stick. And there's the two ends of the subject object.
Yeah.
The hearer and the thing that's heard. And it's... That's just one thing.
You're saying that they arise...
Well, it's all one. It's one thing. So you can't have somebody hearing without... You know, without the hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
And people seem to really... To me, it's really obvious, but people seem to have a lot of trouble understanding that or seeing that.
I get.
Well, the stick, which is one thing, it's just one thing. It has two ends.
Yeah, two ends.
Yeah.
And one end is the...
So team two seems to... Well, two is one.
Yeah, so if you fixate on I am hearing, and then you created me and the object, and you're stuck as me, and that's for the fixation.
Yeah.
But in action, when you sort of step back from it all, and the sense of me... is something that arises because I'm looking at an object.
Something you said before, I thought was hit the nail right on the head. It's something that came out of Krishnamurti. One of the only things that came out of Krishnamurti that I remember has been really totally accurate, which is the thinker and thought arise together. That is so true.
Yeah.
And how I forget that, I don't know. Because
it is
so true. There's no thought without a thinker.
That's Bob's stick. Yeah.
Right.
You can't have one in a stick.
Yeah.
So thinking, thinker, thought, seeing, seer, and the visual object, hearing.
See, when that thought comes up,
it
seems to have in it, or for me, when it happens here, the thought comes up, and it seems to point, the way it talks, it's like a joker, or it's like a con man, that talks as if it's talking to you as a person.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and it, what it doesn't say when it pops up and does that is oh, I am not talking to an actual person, I am... the impression that there is an actual person whilst I'm here, and then as soon as it's gone, there isn't anything else, that's it. And it's like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
That is so cheeky, man. It's like a con. It's like a total con.
When I was in Peru, I had this really vivid dream of, it was one of those lucid dreams, but waking up in the dream, I woke up in a lavish kind of circus tent that was open at the front, and there was this little imp, and it's like in medieval clothing.
Right.
And there's this little, as I woke up, I noticed this little dwarf man or little imp whispering in my ear. like this. I'm like, wow, what the hell? Like, and then he disappeared.
Yeah.
And then I'm like walking through this carnival. And I knew in the dream, I knew that that was my mind.
Yeah.
Or that was exactly what you described then. The guy talking to you and telling you in the dream who you are and what your limitations are and what your fears are. And
fool just going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. But it's so convincing that you think that that when it's there, that he's actually talking to an actual person. But when it's not there, there's no person. Is that accurate, do you think? That's certainly what I found. No thought, no thinker. They come together.
Yeah.
Mm. What you learn here is that, you know, there's a pseudo subject and a pseudo object. So if you're talking about hearing, I hear something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just hearing.
Mm-hmm.
The hearing is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see it, you'll still seemingly make the same misidentification, but less and less. And so,
mm-hmm.
so more and more, I notice the thoughts and I don't feel a strong identification with them.
No.
So I'm not sure that I would say that, you know, that immediately the thinking's happening, there's implicit in it, there's a belief that I'm the thinker thinking the thoughts.
There's no belief anymore. It's a sense of me thinking can come up, but it's like you're not fooled by it.
Yeah.
Is the functioning ing gives us something that's happening in the mind. You're thinking or you're seeing right now, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And the thought will come up, I see.
Mm.
So the thought I see comes up, you form a seer,
mm.
a subject. It's just a conceptual translation of what's going on. And as soon as there's I see, what do you see? Whatever the object is,
mm.
you put the label on that. So you formed a subject and object. Two things.
Mm-hmm.
But can there be a seer that's not seeing?
There's just seeing. There can't be a seer.
Without seeing, mm-hmm. there can't be the seeing without seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're only divided conceptually. That goes to the thinking, the tasting,
mm-hmm.
the touching, the smelling, the feeling.
It just seems so much easier with things like seeing and hearing, but thoughts, they won't just come up and say...
No.
In this context, fine. But let's say you're in a work, or you're in a stressful situation, or a relationship thing, or something like that. And the thoughts don't just come up and say...
You're telling the same story again.
Well, I'm reporting times when things have happened.
Yes.
That the reason why you buy into them, because when they come up, often they're so complicated, they come up with such implications that you buy into them. And then
everybody else is.
But 99.9% of everybody makes that, if you like, error.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes you think you should have been so different?
No, I'm not saying I shouldn't have been different, I'm just saying now, having seen that, it's just fascinating to see that, because when that thought comes up, now I've seen that the implied thinker comes up with the thought, then you just go, okay, the thinker is with the thought. It's not pointing at a thinker that I then got to go and find and resolve. It's just thought and the thinker arise and fall together.
And historically, you know, like a month down the track,
mm-hmm.
you'll have got, seemingly, you'd get frustrated with yourself because you got lost in your...
Or might have jumped in front of a train, you know, I don't know how it's going to go.
On Sunday, it was, believe it or not, half an hour of sunshine, and I was bushwalking. And Carolyn said, I'm going to keep going. I said, I'm going to lie in the grass. So I lay in the grass. And we all have these experiences all day long. And I'm lying in the grass, and I'm just sort of like, I don't know what I was doing, dozing or whatever.
Why am I getting wet?
Well, exactly. All of a sudden, my bum got cold, and up jumps the thought, cold bum and an eye. Immediately, you know.
Mm.
Yet prior to that, what was happening? Seeing was happening. Hearing was happening.
Mm-hmm.
The breathing, getting wet was happening, and then all of a sudden, you know, that eye pops up. And
yeah, I'm in your eye.
Yeah. I mean, you know, think of any time in the day, and I can think of lots of experiences throughout the day where you're just tootling along. That eye is not really there. You're not saying, I am walking on the footpath, and I am the seer, and it is the seeing. I know that seeing is happening underneath, you know. It's just...
In fact, the majority of time.
The majority of the day.
You're seeing, hearing, and there's no me that, you know, you're not telling yourself a story, I'm hearing this, or you just...
And that's when you'll play your best piano, when the eye's not there.
You see, that there you go, case in point.
Yeah,
that's the time, because I improvise, and the one thing that stops clear
improvising is being aware of the thoughts when you're playing. You don't want that's the last thing you want.
It's like walking down to Oxford Street thinking, oh man, I'm going to avoid the next guy. And suddenly, whereas if you're not thinking, you're just walking through,
just flowing,
internal,
just you, flowing,
you do it unconsciously.
Yeah.
Just.
You often say, musicians often say, what do they say? They're like in the groove, you know? Like
In the zone. Yeah.
You can't go anywhere except play really well.
Oh, yeah.
There's no choice.
Yeah.
It's just happening.
Yeah. But that's like the natural state of playing, you know, which everyone dreams for. It's like a spiritual state, which a lot of people experience. Spiritual experiences through music. No interest in spirituality or philosophy or anything like that, but they have to get it through music.
Yeah, all that oratory, you know, off they go. They don't even know what they're bloody saying. Yeah. And the crowds are applauding and clapping.
Yeah.
Mick with his writing and, you know, you with your piano. And
when
you were cutting someone open, you guys, you know, you're thinking about it.
Just,
you know?
I feel the urge to do that now, but...
Therapeutic cold steel.
You
see that word, that label, spirituality, we put on. How's that thing?
No.
It's all the one, is
it? It's either all spiritual or it's all non-spiritual.
Yeah.
Actually, it's actually really, really unhelpful because it sets up an idea of, you know, something less than ordinary.
Yeah. And you've got to attain it.
Especially that it's sort of like, that's right, this must be difficult, it's less than ordinary and so on.
But you pick these things up through your experience through this. I mean, if Bobism was taught in schools, you know, the world would be a much better place.
How do you know?
Well, I don't know, you didn't come with all this baggage and all this shit, would you? You just clear point and you go about your life and do no harm. I don't know. But yeah, you pick up these spiritual ideas and whatnot because you meet people who think it's true and they say it in a certain way. And
Jesus wasn't a Christian.
No.
If they'd only listened to Jesus and know what he said, then everything in the world would be fine. Mm. Or Muhammad.
Yes,
there's been saints, saviors, and seers all down through the ages who are going to save the world. Where are they all now? They're all nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No one has ever gone beyond no thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, in fact, you are no thing right now. You've gone as far as it is.
Still want to work it out. And then it's quite funny, and then I just go, oh, well, it's quite enjoy it.
I think.
But you can't even then, like, just there going, yeah, no, I'm not going to do it.
That's how it comes up and expresses it.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because, for me, I'm still looking for, like, the ideal way to express it, you know what I mean? So I build all these new concepts, and I have all these ideas and ways of saying things. And they're just a bloody potpourri of bloody...
Have you thought about sort of comparing it to like a seed growing from the ground into a little tree?
That's my favourite analogy. I'm not allowed to talk about the seed here. I'm not allowed to talk about meditation. You're lucky you've got away with it.
Give me the seed thing, man. I'm new. I want to hear
the seed. The seed thought it's bad.
I'm going to miss out on the seed. You're coming on Thursday, are you doing that?
Mate, I'll open up with the seed.
Okay, well, thank you.
There's a good one, though. Come and see me tomorrow night, mate.
Okay. Well, Don't let anyone tell me it doesn't get better.
No, I reckon it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I reckon you keep cleaning the mirror.
Right.
Yeah. It keeps getting clearer and clearer and brighter and brighter.
That's been my experience.
That's what I reckon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I just reflect on over time. You know, I think I probably got it on the first night in some weird way, but haven't come here for 5 or 6 years.
Well, you were it when you came here.
Well, I know, Bob. You know, you dwell, I reckon. You know, I reckon you dwell more. You dwell more in what you are, you know.
You spend more time there.
You spend more time there. Your attention's not so much on the appearance, you know. It's unavoidable because I think it's attractive and it's bloody interesting and it's exciting, you know.
The manifestation, the world.
No.
Oh, the
where what I'm you saying are. To dwell, yeah, right. Where you are.
Yeah.
It's a virus, and once it gets hold of you, you're fucked.
That's like I remember. I can't remember his name now. Who's the guy with beard, brown hair?
Brown hair.
He's a DJ.
Cameron. Cameron does the podcast.
No.
It comes here.
Jason.
No, that guy. Not that guy. anyway, but he was saying he walked
Gilbert.
Out one night. Huh?
Gilbert.
Not Gilbert. I can't remember his name. Anyway. Walked out one night and he's like, he goes, do you ever get the feeling that you wish you had never freaking heard about it?
Yeah.
He goes, it's fucked. It's like a virus. And I think that night I kind of went, gurus. I think a couple of weeks later I had the thought of The Matrix. Yeah. You know that movie, The Matrix?
Don't take the blue pill.
And it's like somebody says something to you, like, I thought about it because when I spent a lot of time in Peru, I went to Peru and drank hallucinogenics for a year. One of the things that kind of got me was that if somebody had said something like, one of the things that you need to do in your journey is find the blue pearl, right? The following day in ceremony, a blue pearl would arise, and I'm like, oh, how did that get in there? And then it's like, again, it's like words, everything that's said to you, and like a guru or somebody saying something to you, everything that's said to you it's all part of it, and it's kind of like a virus, isn't it? Because you can't, once hearing it, you can't unhear it.
Yeah.
It's impossible to unhear it, and sometimes you wish like bugger you could unhear it. But it's really strange.
Why would you want to unhear it?
No, but you wouldn't. But that's the story that comes up sometimes. You're like, oh.
One of the things that I like a really sort of remembered and liked, and I guess at some strange level there must be some belief, but you write at the beginning of your spiel every single time. I've ever heard you do it, which is like hundreds of times. You sort of say, "What you're seeking, you already are." And I used to think, why did you say that? Like, what's the point? Like, is that going to help? Like, he doesn't know yet. He hasn't been ticked. But actually, it is. It does sort of quiet the mind and sort of relax you a little bit. There must be some sort of belief thing. So
that's a big one.
Even
noticing, like, seeing you over the last few months, and just having your voice pop in my head every now and then during the day, it'll be like that, you know, or in my writing, because my writing again is a dialogue back to myself from God knows where. But and that will come out, and in moments or whatever, that word will come out, or that sentence will come out. Remember, you are already that, and then it stops. The writing will stop for a while, and then I'll sit for a bit, and something will start up again, and so it's.
I was just trying to desperately. I remember that there was this phrase, and he was talking about, I'd hear Bob's voice and see him in my mind, and I was trying to remember what the hell it was. I used to, I literally used to cling to it. If I felt fear come up, whatever, I cling to this, and then I've forgotten. I haven't used it in years, and it's that what's wrong with right now if you don't think
about
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm. If you have to have, I was just thinking when you said that, what was that thing I said?
Yeah.
Oh, what the hell it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what it was. I used to say that over and over
well,
and over.
You weren't thinking about it.
Yeah. I'd probably say it to myself 50 times a day, but not a lot, you know, like a lot.
It's like these hidden mantras.
Because I came, I had so much fear. I remember he told me, and I was trying to get out, and, I was, and they're going, he's tricking me, and he's like, look, he's not that bright, he should, I should be able to figure this out. This is tricking I knew it was right, I knew it was right, I could see, you know, I'm just going, no, there's a way out.
I remember, like, before when you were saying that about, like, the fear coming up, like, that I've had that heaps of the same, the same thing, and your mind's trying to freaking out, like your mind just freaks out trying to corner it and grasp it.
Prior to that, if you'd asked me, I would have, you know, a few months before, if you'd asked me, and I've been completely honest, I would have told you I've got two emotions I love. I used to love my wife, and I lose my temper, I get angry, and I sort of knew there was something wrong with me.
Yeah.
But that was it. That was my emotional repertoire. Mm. And I said, thank God I don't feel fear. Mm. And then more and more, I realized over time, you know, and probably about the time it was at its apex when I sort of first came here, was that fear was the air I breathed. It was like, I was saturating. It was like a, you know, it was like a sort of fish sort of being told that he lives in water, you know, what I mean? Just, you know, what's water? But I remember that first time, I could see it, and I was just there going, you know, and a lot of fear, because, and you know, and it, there's a residual, it's not like you sort of, you know, you get, when I heard it and I saw it, and I calmed down, and I could see it again, I came back, and I'd spent, you know, a few days and the next week, couple of weeks trying to work my way out of it, and I couldn't. And so there was an acceptance. And then I thought, well, why am I still, you know, why do I still get fearful? Why do I do, you know? But like, it's just, there's this weight, that's all. It's just, you know, this is just, you know, it's, and you have an expectation that, you know, it's sort of, you have an expectation that everything should be different, that the sea should appear clear, but it doesn't. No. It's still blue. You know what I mean? So you expect that, well, I'm going to be free from fear, I'm going to be free from bad thoughts, I'm going to be free from losing my temper, I'm going to be free. And actually, you do become, you know, more and more and more, the reality, the appearance, seemingly, you know, I can't remember the last time I was whatever. Maybe twice since I first heard of that, and even then it just wasn't like
So I get like with I get angry sometimes when I'm sitting here, you know, Pete gets me really angry when he speaks, like this, like my thoughts go, stop talking, like I'm just like, like I'll get like thoughts or whatever going, like he sounds like, I'm like, stop talking, like he sounds like a salesman, I'm like, stop trying to sell me on your idea, you know, like I'll get, I'm like just sitting here going, but there's also something that knows that discomfort's good, like it's a purging or a, I don't know, and again, I can't control it, I can't do anything about it, whatever appears, but there is a, over time, there seems to be a, it's like there's releases. There's release. I don't know what you want to call it. I don't know.
It's mellowing.
Yeah, it just mellows out.
That's that awesome line you use in your opening spiel book where you say, it's the I am here talking to the I am over there. Hey, what is that? You reflect on that, and it's awesome. But just, what is it?
I'm not talking to anybody. I'm not talking to any mind. I'm talking to that I am that I am. To that presence awareness that expresses through the mind as the thought I am. Just to this, nothing else.
I'm going to learn that off by heart. That's really says it all.
Because I've said that sometimes to you, Bob. Who are you talking to, Bob? Bob's like, remember what I say. I'm like, hey, yeah. Who are you talking to? There's no one here.
But the amazing thing, you keep coming back.
Hey, yeah, good. Glutton for punishment.
Well, it's starting to show signs of wearing through, isn't it?
Yeah. That's true.
Well, this meeting was really boring. Let's go to the pub.
Mate.
So how long are you still in Melbourne for?
2 more days. I've been here for 2 days. Yeah. I've got 5 days in total, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The first meeting I came to was Sunday. I came straight from the airport. So 34 hours.
Wow.
In the air.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, what are you heading? You've got Thursday night.
34 hours in the air.
Well, pretty much.
You did the milk run.
I did Edinburgh, Manchester, Manchester, London, London, Singapore, Singapore, Sydney, Sydney, Melbourne. Mm. Yeah, not ideal.
Friday morning, you're back.
I go back Friday morning. Yeah, yeah. So we have a meeting on Thursday. Straight back to work.
Yep.
Well, it's because of your tight schedule that I reckon you just went for it.
That's it.
I met you.
Yeah.
Can't dally here.
No, that's right.
Down to the meat and bones.
Yeah. No, it's been. I think you're right. Focusing the, you know, an urgency. Mm. Certainly, when I had my first meeting with Bob on the second day, my thought really strongly came up, and it's something that John Wheeler had said, I think, when he was talking about being here. Because I spoke to John on the phone, and he said that when he was there, he got the feeling like suddenly, this is your opportunity. You must take this opportunity. Mm. Just sort of that thought came up when I was speaking to Bob. That sort of feeling just came up, like, there's something to find out here. And then minutes later, yeah. So yeah, I'm glad I didn't have too much time. Now, I suppose in a way there's an urge to want to relive those sort of feelings, but those feelings are temporary, aren't they? They're not to be relived. They're not what it's about.
People can have some amazing experiences. Mm. I set that up then.
Yeah.
I had this experience, I've got to get back to that. But it's dead. As soon as you've had it, it's over, it's dead.
Yeah.
It's gone with everything else.
But there was a purpose.
While they're trying to get back to it, they're missing out on what. There could be another one coming up right now if they were at the moment.
Well, it's actually, and that's the thing, it's actually coming up all the time.
Yeah.
Mm. Like that's it never exactly, stops. Yeah. Like great. That brilliant stuff.
Ever fresh.
Yeah.
It's one day. But now he's holding on to the old experiences or something at all. They're dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what it was all about, you know what was necessary to get out of it, or, you know, trying to relive it. It's like trying to relive yesterday.
It is that. It's a real grasping, isn't it? To hanging on to the past, what you had, what you thought you had, what you thought, who you thought you were. It's all that, like, clutching.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I recorded
falling down a hole and trying to grab onto anything that you can.
I recorded the meeting, and then, like, 3 hours later, sitting in a sushi bar, I was listening back to it. to the moment over again, like, now what? What was that feeling? Nope.
Yeah. And that's the biggest signpost.
Just sounds like a foolish Englishman grasping away at something. That's all I can hear. no big moments.
It's quite stunning how life keeps on kind of pointing you to what it's not.
Mm.
Isn't it? Like it's, well, it can't do anything but, because it's constantly changing, but yeah.
Mm. Had enough?
Beauty, Bob.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.